Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
It's Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking, another fabulous program lined up for you today. Who's on the program, Michael?
Well, we've actually got Rhonda Stewart, who created with us the CDs, the relaxation CDs. They've been so popular, we're bringing four new ones to market. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about the first one, which is all about de-stressing.
How was that birthday party last
week?
Oh, look, it was good. I got through it.
Do you need to de-stress?
Yeah, and how was your birthday?
Fantastic. Yeah, thanks for finally
remembering. I need to de-stress. That's why I'll get the CD. What else is on the show today?
We're also going to hear from our food director, Michelle, and she's going to tell us all about winter roasts and a whole range that we should be cooking them and how to cook them.
Fantastic. And of course, if you'd like to win a prize, jump onto mindfood.com and all the details are up there. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of great prizes up for grabs here on Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking.
This is Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking.
And on the line now, Michael, a very special guest.
We have Michael Gebe. He is the author of 12 books on creativity and innovation, including the international bestseller, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, 7 Steps to Genius Every Day. Have you wanted to think like Leonardo da Vinci?
I have indeed. Actually, I went to one exhibition of Leonardo da Vinci in British Columbia, Canada, and unbelievable. The man was a visionary, yeah.
He was a genius.
Like a clairvoyant, psychic.
Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you so much.
Now, tell us about creativity. How important is it in our everyday lives?
Well, it's always been important, although back in the Renaissance, we needed Leonardo da Vinci to help us create the concept of individuality, because for 1,000 years prior to that in Europe, people didn't really understand the notion of the power and potentiality of the individual. Today, you need to be creative just to have a happy life.
Yeah. Why Leonardo da Vinci?
When I was a child, Leonardo was one of my heroes along with Superman. And I remember when I discovered that Superman was just a comic book character, but Leonardo was real. And he seemed to represent all of our human potential. And that's something that's always fascinated me, is how can we develop the mind? How can we develop our creative ability? How can we develop all of our talents? And Leonardo seemed to be the most creative, intelligent, talented person who ever lived. So he was a natural role model. And many people have studied Leonardo and written books about him. There's wonderful exhibitions about him. But I asked this question, and the question was, what can we learn from him personally? How can we practice what he recommends? And the great news is that if you read his notebooks carefully, he's giving advice. He's telling us what to do. He says, here's how you can develop your creative power. He tells his students what to do, and I just translated what he said from Renaissance language into contemporary understanding, and it seems to have struck a chord with people around the world.
Mm. In your new book, Brain Power, Improve Your Mind as You Age, how different is our brain as we age from a creativity point of view? Do we get better? Do we get sluggish? What actually happens up there in the old gray matter?
When all of us were growing up, it was believed that by age 7, your brain power was set for life and there was nothing you could do to further develop it. But we now know that that's not true. You can go on developing and improving your brain throughout your life. There's a new term, neuroplasticity.
Yes.
Neuro means brain cell. Plasticity means changeable and capable of development.
Yeah.
The key for all of us is, how do we apply this new paradigm of science? How do we practice neuroplasticity? How do we develop the brain as we get older? And obviously that's what Brain Power, Improve Your Mind as You Age is all about.
Do you believe that Leonardo, you know, pushed his brain power beyond what most people do, or was it just intuition?
It's great. He writes about it 500 years ago. He says, iron rusts from disuse. Water that does not flow becomes stagnant. Thus it is with the human mind.
Yeah.
So he intuited a lot of what contemporary research has validated. We now know that if you learn something new, just 15 minutes a day is all it takes.
Yeah.
Challenge your brain, do something you haven't done before, learn a new language, learn new vocabulary, learn how to juggle, which I will be teaching at the Mind and Its Potential Conference to all the participants.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for joining us on today's program, Brain Power, Improving Your Mind as You Age. You should see the mind map that Michael has written in front of us. We are on a stairway to heaven, I can tell you.
Well, it's that cold, wintry feeling. And you do know, on Sunday now, we have a roast, a family roast.
I think it's a really cool idea.
Well, it's the one night we're kind of all together and, you know...
You've been doing it for months, haven't you?
Well, I'm not sure about months. It feels like months. But on the weekend, we had friends round and now they're going to start it. We seem to have... And you and Pat...
Really?
Yeah,
we're going to do it. I think it's a really cool idea. It goes back to that meal, that charity that we had on a few weeks ago.
That's right.
I think that's a really good thing that we all should get behind.
Exactly. And there are so many easy, you know... roasts to make.
Yeah.
So I'd like to welcome to the show Mind Food's food director, Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Now, the thing is to a great roast, though, it's one thing having an idea and inviting people around, and I know later we're going to talk about the range of different recipes that we've got, but how do you cook a great roast?
Look, I'm going to pass on my mother's recipe. Basically, what I do is you know, select your meat, whether it be lamb or beef or chicken, and let it, you know, take it out of the fridge and let it rest on the bench for a while. Turn the oven up nice and hot, 200, 220, and then you flavour your meat. You trim off all the excess fat that you don't want, but you've got to add your flavourings, your garlic, your rosemary, honey, chilli, mustard, anything that you want to add, you can add to the meat, you can pierce it. And then you brush it, give it a bit of a massage with some oil, some salt and pepper, and then you pop it into a nice hot oven. And I cover it for the first 30 minutes and with tin foil, and then bake it away, and then half an hour later, turn it right down to 180, or even lower if you want to 160, and remove the tin foil, and then it's on its way, and just cook it, following, you know, depending on the weight of the meat. And then the secret is always to rest it. Rest the meat for as long as possible before you serve it, and then all the juices will stay in the meat and you'll have a beautiful, beautiful...
What about temperature?
Temperature?
Yeah, is it better to cook things longer or slower?
You can start it off with 220, as I said, for the first 30 minutes, and then pop it down to about 180, or even I go as low as 160, depending on time.
Right.
And then for the length of time, basically, if it's like a fillet of beef, basically, you know, 14 minutes will do you, will be a medium. 16 minutes is a well done, but that's beef. But
Right. Basically,
it depends on the weight. I always ask the butcher, like, how long will I need to bake this for?
It does depend on the weight, doesn't it?
It does depend on the weight, and it depends on what meat you're cooking.
Sure.
But I do think you're right. It is actually about resting it, and that was one mistake I always made, and I think a lot of people make that, is, you know, you do go to all this trouble of a beautiful piece of meat or a roast, and you've rubbed all the flavours in and it's cooked well.
Mm.
And then before you know it, it's on your plate, and you really do have to rest it. Now, is that because that sort of releases the flavours within the meat, Michelle?
No, all the juices when you've been cooking are, you know, all bouncing around the place, so it just lets them stabilise, and rather than ending up on your cutting board, they just stay within the meat. So it just gives the meat time to relax.
And I guess it also then doesn't become tough when you
cut it. No, it's beautiful and tender. And then while it's resting, you can make the gravy, set the table. You know, I like to, when I'm resting it, cover it again with tin foil, you know, just to keep it warm, but delicious.
And all those beautiful baked vegetables.
Oh, I know, I love
pumpkin.
Them. I love them. And we've got loads of recipes.
So that's all on mindfood.com.
It is.
It sure is. And, you know, I was thinking earlier today, you know, some people sort of celebrate a mid-year Christmas theme. You know, there's a really great turkey recipe, a orange and thyme roast turkey. I was looking at it before. It's infused with a scent of orange and thyme. And it's, you know, the image we've got, it's decorated with figs. And I thought, how beautiful is that mid-year for
Christmas? Christmas in July.
Exactly, those, you know, listeners that are doing that. But there's all sorts of recipes. You know, there's a roast of lamb with potato and fennel.
We've got a Spanish roast turkey, which we did this Christmas. It was absolutely beautiful. And we even made it the next day. We went back to the shop, got another turkey, and made it again.
We did, actually. It was so good.
Fantastic.
Hey, listen, thanks, Michelle. And for more recipes, go to mindfood.com. And if you'd like to get one of our recipes every day, sign up to the Mind Food Daily Recipe.
Thank you.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, Smart Thinking.
We love prizes. What's in the cupboard today?
We sure do. And one of my favourite movies I have seen over the last year, it's The Woman on the Sixth Floor, and it's a DVD.
Yep.
You can go in the drawer to win one of five copies, valued at $35. It's a really fun film set in 1962 Paris.
Oh, lovely.
And it's where a conservative couple lives are turned upside down by Spanish maids who live upstairs. It's fantastic. I love that movie.
So to find out more details, jump onto mindfood.com. And also, you can also grab a subscription there if you're looking for something to give away as well.
That's right. Head to mindfood.com and you can get a subscription to Mindfood Magazine.
I love a good tune. So do you.
Well, and did you watch any of the Jubilee festivities?
Love that.
Well, how it was kind of interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. And you know, the Queen really does select a lot of those acts.
I've got to tell you, she stepped up.
Well, you've stepped up today. You walked into the studio today. Ben, guess what I've got on the phone today?
Well, I didn't think much of her Cliff Richard choice.
No,
however,
no.
The Canadian group, the Tenors, have you heard of them?
I have heard of them.
The four very talented Canadian guys. Now, one of them actually grew up and lived for a while in Brisbane in Australia. Did you know that?
Yes. Reading the bio just a few minutes ago.
Well, Fraser Walter is on the line. Hi, Fraser. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Very good. Now, tell me, what was that experience like singing with the Queen, or for the Queen?
It's, you know, hard to beat, to be honest with you. We've been over in London for a couple weeks, and to have the invite to sing at Windsor Castle during the Queen's Jubilee celebrations, it was for the pageant, and there were you know, horse troops from all around the world that represented. We sang during the Canadian portion. The Queen had visited Canada, I think, 22 times in her reign.
Wow, wait.
She's always been quite fond of it. So we sang while the Royal Canadian Mounted Police did their musical ride, and it was a real honor for us. It was the first time that the Royal Canadian Police had live singers perform during their act. So that was quite an honor, and then obviously to be invited by the Queen, and then we actually had a private tea with her.
Oh, what was that
and,
like?
And Prince Philip with about, you know, 30 people on the cricket grounds at Windsor Castle, and you know, it was amazing. She's so gracious, and you know, she came up and you know, you wait for her to speak to you, and she sort of reached her hand out and shook our hands and mentioned that she loved the variety in our repertoire, and you know, it was just one of those pinch yourself moments.
You gave her a CD?
She already had it.
a signed poster for a bedroom. Do you think she sort of, you know, pumped so much with all the knowledge, or do you think it was quite genuine that she, you know, she did know who you were and what you did?
Well, you know, fortunately, we had the opportunity to sing for her on her last visit to Canada a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we had met previously. It was very quick. You know, there was kind of a long receiving line at that point, so there wasn't really time to have a chat, but it was very, you know, just a very quick hello, how are you? So on this opportunity, you know, it was nice to actually be able to connect with her. And you know, she's very sincere and very sort of youthful in her eyes. It's quite something to be in her presence, and she sort of makes you feel like you're the only one in the world when she's speaking to you. It's a very special experience. But then Prince Philip is always there, close in tow to crack jokes, you know, and so he, you know, he said, hey boys, you know, I hope you're vocals don't break during the song or something, you know. And then after we sang, you know, he said, oh, it's nice to see you all held up and you're still on singing terms or something. So
he's
kind of
a real hoot,
you know, yin and yang of royalty there.
Yeah.
And tell me, how did the Tenors come about, you know, the four of you?
The three of us were introduced by a lady on the west coast of Canada, actually, you know, about 5.5 years ago. And there was a different fourth member at the time, and it took us a while sort of to realize, you know, how important it is to, you know, not just to be musically, you know, in sync with each other, but personally, you know, we spend a lot of, you know, more time with the Tenors than we do with our families, you know, on many occasions. So that personal component is very important. And so that fourth spot was actually a revolving door for quite a while we auditioned some different people, and about 3 years ago we found Clifton, the fourth member, who really was the perfect fit. And since then, you know, they say that the rest is history, and we've been very fortunate to release our album, you know, both in the U.S. and over in the U.K. You know, we have a couple platinum albums in North America, so we're so excited now to be coming into Australia.
Well, Fraser Walters, thank you very much for joining us today from the Tenors. It's been really nice to talk to you.
You're welcome.
And we can't better the Queen, but when you do come out here, we'd love a Mind Food concert.
Oh, you got it. We'll be there. No problem.
Thanks very much. Nice to talk to you.
All the best, guys.
This is Mind Food Radio. Smart Thinking.
It's Mind Food Radio, always doing smart thinking interviews, and this is a very interesting segment we've got on the program now, Michael.
We have. I'd like to welcome to the show Francesca. She's the CEO of Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Month. Hi, Francesca.
Hello.
You're a peak body that I guess urges early diagnosis of, to avoid serious long-term health damage in and around this, aren't you?
Yes, that's right, yeah. Crohn's and Colitis Australia has been around for about 27 years, and our main purpose is to provide support and information for people who have been diagnosed with inflammatory bowel disease. Our awareness month, the focus of our awareness month, which was actually in May, was to encourage people to speak up if they have bowel disease or if they have any type of bowel symptoms, because if they leave it too long and they actually do have an inflammatory bowel disease, then it can cause long-term damage.
How do you know, though, if you have a problem like this?
It has to be diagnosed, of course. See, the problem is that a lot of people are actually too embarrassed to go to their doctor if they have a bowel problem. You know, they put up with grumbling stomachs or diarrhea or pain. For some reason, people tend to think that it's okay to put up with that until it gets to a point where, unfortunately, some people do find themselves in the emergency ward. Mm-hmm. You need to go to your doctor and have a proper diagnosis, and that can involve anything from blood tests to x-rays and a colonoscopy until a final proper diagnosis is made. One of the issues that we find is that people confuse inflammatory bowel disease with irritable bowel syndrome, which is a completely different disease. Mm. And because of that, they self-diagnose. Mm. So they go online and they, you know, see the symptoms are similar. And so they try to basically heal themselves through diet or you know, going to naturopaths or whatever. And unfortunately, that means that the disease progresses within the bowel. Yeah. And once it progresses, it gets to a point where a surgery is inevitable. And really, we're trying to discourage that level of disease activity in the body.
Yeah, a friend of mine had that. He was saying the pain was pretty excruciating. Yeah. And it wasn't until, at those last moments that, you know, he suddenly got some help and, you know, he's getting better now. But it's something that you've got to manage, though, for the rest of your life.
You do. It is a chronic illness, and yes, you do need to manage it. You manage it through drug therapy. Obviously, you need a close relationship with your specialist and, you know, and a dietitian as well. Some people find that they have intolerances to wheat and to lactose, but not everybody. It is a case-by-case situation. Certainly, stress management helps because people do feel quite anxious when they have the disease. You know, one of the symptoms is urgency, and that can be extremely stressful. Mm. So we do encourage meditation. And any type of stress management technique that can help you manage that.
Now, the numbers around this are absolutely extraordinary. Over 70,000 people in Australia live with this disease, and you're expecting a rise by 23% by the year 2020. They just seem absolutely extraordinary in numbers.
Yes, they are, unfortunately. We expect the rise because more and more people are being diagnosed. Mm. So it seems to be a modern disease.
They're much younger too, aren't they? You know, I guess, you know, when I started researching this, I just sort of thought it was an older person's sort of disease, but really the diagnosis is anywhere between 15 and 35, is that right?
Yes, that's right. It is very much a young person's disease, and we're finding that children as young as 12, 4, 5 are now being diagnosed. So kids are being diagnosed younger these days as well.
So does this disease discriminate? Is it more a Caucasian type of thing, or...?
No, the disease doesn't discriminate. Really, anyone can get it, although we have found that Jews of European descent are probably 5 times more likely to contract to have inflammatory bowel disease.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, it's a very interesting topic and something we all need to be aware of and look out for, and it's just another test to maybe put on that yearly physical checkup, hey?
Yes, that's right. Yep, early diagnosis certainly makes a difference.
Francesca, thank you very much for your time on today's show.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
We've had so much rain happening around the place. The vegetable garden, my two little pots are going quite well. Apparently, there's been movement at the station at your place, Michael.
I have actually put all those bulbs in. I'm feeling very good. I got out
you
there
put
in the
bulbs
rain.
In. I thought they I were vegetables.
No, I was trying to do the vegetable thing, but the rain sort of put me off that. But I'd like to welcome to the show Clive Bosey. Now, he's very well known. He, of course, has started the Diggers Club. Welcome to the show, Clive.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
Now, you've got a great book, I've got to say. You know, this is one for me because I'm about to start planting my vegetable garden. It's called The Australian Vegetable Garden. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's a second edition of something we developed 12 years ago, and we'd done an amazing amount of research on a farm because I was really disillusioned with modern supermarket tomatoes.
Yeah.
So we decided to grow out a lot of heirlooms that I'd seen in America. And the thing that really surprised me was we got not only better flavour, I guess that was expected, but we actually got better yields and we got earlier and later fruit. So I suppose being a... we had a mail order company and we used to buy from seed merchants and, you know, hybrids at that stage cost 25 times the price of heirlooms. So I sort of, I guess, became a crusader against the modern hybrid supermarket tomato because I'd been conned and paid all this price when, in fact, you know, heirlooms were really backyard varieties and supermarket tomatoes really bred for people who don't care much about flavour.
Yeah. Clive, tell us about the Diggers Club. What's that all about?
Well, we like to think of ourselves as a very subversive organisation. if you go back through time, Diggers were the people who were involved in the Eureka Stockade.
That's right.
And if you go back 200 years before that, they caused a rebellion against all the rich people when they put up the rents and people couldn't afford to grow their own food.
So you're like the modern-day Jack and the Beanstalk, hey?
Well, if you saw the size of me, maybe you wouldn't think I'd climb the beanstalk. So we've been, I guess, anti-modern for about 30 years, and I guess the Diggers Club is the way we've expressed those views, not just in our catalogues, but in the offerings of the heirloom seeds that we offer and the perennial plants that we grow.
But it's sort of come full circle, isn't it? Because now we all want, you know, last night I made a salad and, you know, we love the heirloom tomatoes and sure enough, that's what it was all about and all the different coloured and they were organic and, you know, that's how we like to eat.
There's now 5,000 different tomatoes in their collection. There's 3,000 different beans and there's 800 different lettuces. Mm. So, you know, we're all used to you know, the head lettuce you get in McDonald's hamburger and a tomato, red tomato you see in a supermarket. But when you go back and see the incredible diversity that we could be growing, that's what got us excited. It's just a lot of fun. And, you know, we try to practice what we preach. So we have two gardens open to the public, and you definitely won't find ankle-high marigolds or petunias in those. You'll find traditional heritage varieties of perennials.
Yeah.
Much more, I guess, like when people travel to England and see those fantastic herbaceous borders.
Yeah.
We're rather influenced by the same, but of course our plants have to survive our drought and our hot, dry conditions. So we've adapted them, I guess, for a down-under, upside-down climate.
They do. Well, thank you for being our heirloom tomato warrior. You have been really cool to talk to, Clive.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, if you'd like the new book, it's available, The Australian Vegetable Garden. All good stuff. I tell you what, it just makes me want to get out there into that vegetable garden. And he's a great guy because what he believed in, he went out and made happen.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
So, Michael, we like to win a prize. So how do we do it?
Look, we love a giveaway here at Mind Food. It's very simple. Just go to mindfood.com. There are hundreds and thousands of dollars worth of prizes you can win. So head on there and click away. And who knows, you could be winner of something fabulous.
Mindfood.com. This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
Now, Matt Clements is one of the most talented hairdressers in New Zealand. In fact, last year he won Colourist of the Year at the Hair Awards, and he's just done the same thing. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks very much.
What do you like about colour?
Mate, I think just the variation and the ability to change things very quickly. At the same time, yeah, it's fun just putting your hands in a few bowls of goo.
Now, listen, tell me, though, you're the owner of Assembly Hair at Alexandra Headway there in Queensland.
Yeah.
I've seen your photographic portfolio this year and last year, and we've had your work in the pages of magazine and online, and they're absolutely spectacular. For a customer coming into your salon, though, tell me the process that they go through, because obviously your work for the competition is something quite different to what, you know, you're doing on a day-to-day basis.
To be honest, not that different at all.
Okay.
You know, I think my work is quite commercial. I mean, there's strength in it, but you know, I still want women to look beautiful. You know, whether they have, you know, parts of their hair, you know, taken out very short or strong colour, it's all about inspiration, and you can adapt, you know, pretty much any look to the high street.
Yeah.
You know, very, very easily. And I think too, you know, my reputation or our reputation at the assembly, you know, not only throughout Australia, but, you know, wherever we travel and do our work. You know, our work's known to be strong and edgy, but all of that can be softened to suit someone's lifestyle.
That's right.
You know, at the same time, it's what brings clients to us.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're 18 or you're 80, people, I think, still come to see us for, you know, just a high level of work and a good finish and just the fact that we're thinking a little bit more about what we're doing.
Now, you're an ambassador. In fact, you're a global ambassador for Schwarzkopf, you know, from a colour point of view.
That's right.
The inspiration as you travel around the world with them, what do you take and bring back to Australia and New Zealand?
There's various things. I mean, I get inspiration from all sorts of things. I mean, I surf and I have a music studio, and there's lots of things I'm personally into, but, you know, travelling and meeting different people, and you know, I think people are basically the same everywhere you go. It's just, you know, whether you're in a city or, I mean, certainly Europe, you have a lot more changes seasonally happening than we perhaps have down in Australia. So, you know, the things I think I bring back are probably not as many as things that I take away. You know, I think Australia and New Zealand, you know, have so much to offer in the world of fashion, and part of that's because we're kind of left alone. You know, we can develop what we do, and, you know, I think... You know, I learn every day wherever I am, but certainly it's when I go away that I find people actually get more out of us.
Yeah.
You know, I think for so long we've been considered the back end of fashion, but I can tell you what we're doing down here is right on the money.
For a lot of our listeners listening in today to the program, and look, we see these glossy magazines and we see people look so beautiful, very hard to recreate if you're on a very tight budget. So what are a couple of things that people could do at home who are considering using colour, and what's your advice on that?
First and foremost, what you have has to suit your lifestyle, and budget is part of that. You know, a lot of the photographs that people might bring in you know, require a certain amount of effort and maintenance, whether that be, you know, on the tools, you know, before you go to work with a blow dryer, or in the salon every 6 weeks. I mean, I would always, as a colorist, of course, suggest that people see someone professional. You get a professional job done, it'll actually last you longer. There's always ways to upkeep and refreshen color at home. But I wouldn't look to start those things at home. I think to maintain something that's been done, maybe that you get to stretch it out a little bit more. But certainly if budget's an issue, then, you know, as a loose rule, the more I do to you, the more you have to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, keep it simple.
Why should people use colour?
Colour is, you know, look at it. I mean, as much as a black and white image can look amazing, or black and white television, you add colour and all of a sudden it's, you've got luminosity and you've got shine and there's a bit of radiance. And, you know, I think above all else, I can bring things out in a haircut that perhaps you're not willing to do with a pair of scissors. So show texture and, you know, have gradient of tone. But above all else, you know, the best hair is shiny hair, whether that be blue, black, red or yellow or brown. It doesn't really matter, but shiny hair is the best, and, you know, it should complement your skin.
That was Matt Clements, who is such a talent. You know, his work is absolutely extraordinary, and I'm so happy that he has won that award again, because if anyone deserves it, it's him. So for any more details on Matt's work, go to mindfood.com.
Thank you.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
And welcome back to Mind Food Radio. This is a really interesting topic. This man, Craig Hamilton, suffered a psychotic episode just days ahead of broadcasting for the Sydney Olympics. And it was then that Craig was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And Craig is going to join us on the line right here today on Mind Food Radio. Craig Hamilton, welcome to the program.
Very nice to be with you. Thank you.
I tell you what, broadcasting, everybody thinks it's not a pressurized industry. How did you get through that?
Broadcasting, you run on adrenaline. And I found that was my experience for a number of years before I experienced mental ill health just before the Olympics. There was a lot of adrenaline. You used coffee, I suppose, to pep you up when you needed that extra energy hit. And it was very fast-paced, and the pressure came with not only delivering content, but delivering content inside a deadline and thinking very much on your feet. And that's where the pressure comes. I suppose, but at the same time, I wouldn't swap the job for anything. I absolutely love what I do.
Yeah.
And it's been fantastic.
Now, you're a husband and father. How did your family cope with that episode?
They were fantastic. They were unbelievably supportive, and I can't do, or I wouldn't be able to do what I do today in terms of speaking, in terms of having written now two books, without their support. And I wouldn't have recovered as well and continue to do so today. It's 12 years on, and that family support's been so important.
Craig, can you just very briefly walk us through what happened?
Yeah, I can. The start of 2000, I began to experience mild depression. It was the first time I could really ever say that I'd been depressed. I was 37 years of age. I had no idea what it was. All I knew was I felt awful, and it was impacting on my whole being. It affected what I thought, it affected what I ate, it affected my sleep pattern, my concentration, my energy levels, my sex drive, you name it. On every level, depression was debilitating. It took me probably 3 months, 3.5 months of it steadily getting worse before I thought the penny dropped and realised that this is depression. But I still was unable to tell anybody. My pride and my ego and, you know, the male, Australian male way of dealing with things, which is to just soldier on, kicked in. And it was another 2 months, 2.5 months of just sheer suffering with clinical depression before I actually got to a doctor. And people couldn't believe it, you know. Friends and family and work colleagues, they couldn't believe that that was the experience that I was having, because I wasn't that type of bloke. And I think what it proved to me there and then was that no one is immune to the symptoms of and the experience of depression.
Can I ask you this? For listeners listening to this today, and perhaps, you know, they might know of someone, you know, in the state or they feel, what's the best thing that they can do?
Be supportive. If someone tells you or confides in you that they are depressed, believe them. They wouldn't tell you they're depressed if they weren't. It's one of the hardest things for people to actually own up to, even today. And one of the things you can do is actually extend a hand of a conversation. And you don't do this within a group of 6 or 10 people, because the person that you're trying to help will just run a mile. If you think someone is depressed, the best thing I do is just quietly get them aside. And if they're a friend or a family member or a work colleague, and just say, look, you know, I was just wondering how you were, how you're going. You've been a bit withdrawn lately. You haven't been, you know, the usual life of the party. I'm just concerned about your health. Do you feel okay?
Yeah.
That sort of broached the subject. And you'd be amazed at what that conversation might lead to.
Craig Hamilton, thanks for being on the show. Your new book, A Better Life, is in bookstores in July. You're also an ambassador for Beyond Blue. And for any more detail and around that, go to the Beyond Blue site or to mindfood.com.
Thanks very much.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
I tell you what, Rhonda Stewart's CDs are fabulous. The de-stressing one, I love.
You know, I like to call them the Mind Food CDs by Rhonda Stewart.
Sorry. Well, they're fabulous.
They are fabulous, and they're very, very popular. So popular that we're actually bringing out 4 more. And so in the new edition that goes on sale very soon, you've got the ad, but you can phone us up whenever you like and buy them. But the new CDs, one of them is called Mind Food De-Stress, and I'd like to welcome to the show again Rhonda Stewart. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Mike and Ben.
Now, before we start, I have to say, last time we spoke to you, you were at a health farm and we were trying to smuggle food in.
Oh, it was a boot camp, Ben. Absolutely.
How did you recover after that?
I've actually found enough chocolate to recuperate.
Do you need to head back, do you?
I do. No, I've actually done well. I've lost 4 kilos.
Oh, that's good stuff. Very good.
And de-stressing helps as well, doesn't it, to lose weight?
Look, I agree. You know, the biggest problem with that is you never listen to your own CDs. and it actually brings me to mind that I should, because I've got a daughter about to have a baby and the stress is dreadful. So I'm going to drag my own voice out tonight and listen to it.
Well, this one in De-Stress is extraordinary, because not only do you help people with sort of breathing patterns, but it's also about, I guess, letting go of anxiety and finding a new kind of relaxation. Talk us through, you know, your thinking in and around this one.
Look, you are. You're absolutely right, Ben. What happens is stress is something we face every day, whether it's getting in a car, even just walking out downstairs to have a coffee can be stressful.
Mm.
So it's something that subtly builds, and we don't realize the pressure that's slowly building within us. And then all you need is a couple of little extra this or that, and it just takes it to a level that's very hard to clear. So the aim of the CD is to really start changing the way you respond to all the stresses that you encounter. The aim eventually is that it starts to build a recognition where you start to notice what is stressing you, and it gives you the freedom to start clearing it.
Is it about breaking cycles, do you think?
I think exactly what you're saying is that firstly, becoming more aware and then breaking the cycle of how you responded before.
Is stress something that is man-made, or is it just inbuilt in us?
Look, it's man-made. The pressure of life really has escalated. And, I mean, I work a lot with, I do some work with the hospitals, and I've created a couple of programs with children. Because we're getting little people at the age of six that are suffering things like undiagnosed stomach pain, and it's stress.
Yeah. Then, years ago, we used to call that butterflies when we'd go to school.
Exactly.
Mum, I've got butterflies in my stomach.
Exactly. And now they've exceeded where we were with it, and they're vomiting, and they're doing awful things.
Ooh.
So, you know, stress is a key factor in that.
Rhonda, thank you. As always, it's great to have you on the show. And as I said before, our new range of CDs, Mind Food CDs by Rhonda Stewart, are on sale now. So till next time, Rhonda, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's a wrap, and I tell you what, that wonderful, delicious recipe that Michelle was talking about, we're going to have to make that. The Sunday roast, I think we should put it back on the agenda.
I think you should. And remember, if you want a daily recipe, just go to mindfood.com and sign up.
Now, next week, we've got a bit of a different twist to the program.
We're going into
the psychological field.
We do. It's almost like the psychology show. We've got lots of psychologists, and also Jacqueline Hallier, our sex coach. Her interview is going to be about the growth in erotic fiction.
Yeah, she's really into that, isn't she?
Well, she sure is. That's one not to be missed.
So join us next week. And don't forget, if you'd like to win a prize, jump onto mindfood.com and click on the prize tab.
And also, if you want to subscribe to the magazine, just go to mindfood.com. Have a great week.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking, was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick K. Roos. Bogart Torelli speaking.